When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Ayo, welcome into the CHGO White Sox postgame show. Presented by PointsBet. Use promo code CHGO when you sign up to get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. Welcome into Studio A of our CHGO offices here in the West Loop of Chicago. I'm the host of the CHGO White Sox podcast, Sean Anderson. Follow me on Twitter at Sean_W_Anderson. And alongside me is the full CHGO crew back from Minnesota. Vinny Duber.
I've got that Minnesota tan.
Yes, you do. Vinny Duber, tan as ever from Minnesota. You can follow him on Twitter at Vinny Duber. He's a CHGO White Sox beat writer. And the man in the middle is Herb Lawrence.
Hello.
You look normal.
Yeah.
Okay.
I go to Minnesota.
You can follow him on Twitter.
I just went to Uptown.
At Eckernwall. That's where you're usually at. You can follow him on Twitter at Eckernwall23. He's the CHGO White Sox community leader. We are here after a White Sox win. The White Sox win 2-1 versus the San Diego Padres and taking 2 of 3 from San Diego. They won the first game 3-1, lost the second game 5-2, and won this one 2-1. Lance Lynn went 7 innings pitched, allowing 1 earned run, striking out 5, walking 1, giving up 5 hits. He did give up a home run in the 7th. Blake Snell was the opposing pitcher today. 6 innings pitched, 3 earned runs, 3 hits, 1 earned run, 1 walk, 6 Ks, and an Elvis Andrews moonshot. Let's just start there because we won't be talking too much about the game, but I do want to just talk a little bit about the weekend in San Diego. And Herb, I want you to put on your San Diego hat here.
Yeah.
How did it feel losing 2-3 to the White Sox? You just can't win this season.
No, it's great. I mean, for the Padres, the best thing for them to do now that they're in the playoffs is to keep on losing because you don't want to go against the juggernaut, which is the Atlanta Braves, or the New York Mets, which is the 4 or 5. Whoever loses the division out of that will be the highest wild card. The 5 seed will have to go to one of those cities and play them. You want the Philadelphia Phillies win all the damn games they can so they can pass you up. You go to the 6 seed and play at St. Louis. Not great, but also better than playing versus the Mets or the Braves.
Well, and we saw the weird moment today in the 7th inning when Josh Bell was up. San Diego fans started cheering when nothing happened. They were down in the game, but that's because the Brewers lost and ended up securing a spot. So
fish tacos for all.
You fish tacos for all, and San Diego Slam Diego's back in the playoffs. So congrats to one of your teams.
Yeah, and I'm glad the White Sox, this is what I wanted to see. They actually competing, putting on a show for the people who showed up. There's a lot of White Sox fans out there who wanted to go and see this series and looking for the team to play for the SOX in their chest and the name in the back just in case, you know, some other team is looking for them, just in case a guy or girl is at a game and saying, you know what, I paid good money for this game. You better put good representative effort out there. And they did. The White Sox winning 2 out of 3 from a team that really needed these victories tells me a lot about their heart, tells me a lot about their want to, all that stuff. Lance Lynn looked like a pitcher who was going for, you know, a tune-up for the playoffs. He was out there dealing out there versus Juan Soto, Manny Machado, all the best hitters out there in San Diego, and he did not look like a guy that was giving up, and you wouldn't expect that from Lance Lynn at all, and I appreciate the White Sox giving awesome effort today.
Well, and I think someone who continued to give awesome effort throughout this series and today, Elvis Andrews put the Sox up 1-0 with the solo shot that hit the building. I mean, that's Bartolo Colon territory over there. And then you look on Friday, though, he had a home, or and that wasn't on Friday. On Friday, he had a double off of Yu Darvish. On Saturday, he had a home run off of Clevenger, and then he hits his 16th today. I think he has the most shortstops or most home runs for a shortstop since coming over to the White Sox and all of Major League Baseball. So what has Elvis Andrews meant to this team? Because, I mean, like Herb said, we saw some fight this weekend, and Elvis Andrews leading off this team, leading off ever since he came over, has been a huge jump.
Hey, he's meant a ton. And I think that, you know, you're getting to the point where there's a lot of guys in the clubhouse who fit the description of what I'm about to talk about. But, you know, he's a guy who's been around, and he's a guy who's been through all kinds of seasons. You know, and like I said, Sean, I think it was last week when you read, you know, the ages of the teams around baseball, and the White Sox were a lot older than you might think they are, just because they've brought in so many veteran guys over the last couple of years. But, you know, to be a part of these kinds of seasons before and know how you're supposed to act at the end of them, you know what I mean? I think everybody says every year about these White Sox over the past few years, oh, it's the first time they're experiencing X. It's the first time they're experiencing Y. It's the first time they're experiencing Z. And for those core players, you could even say that about this season. Yeah, they've had losing years before if you go back to the darkest days of the rebuild, but this is the first time, quote-unquote, they've been through a disappointing campaign like this and had to finish out a season like this. Guys like Elvis Andrus are showing everybody how you're supposed to do it. Keep playing. Keep fighting. He's a guy that when you walk up to him in the clubhouse and you're like, oh, what are you guys playing for, you know, this last bid? He'll go, psh, you know, you got to play for everything. Of course you're playing right now for important stuff. Lance Lynn is another one. And, you know, there are several of the guys in the clubhouse who have said that kind of thing. But he has no doubt been a leader, if through nothing else, by example, since he's come over to this team. And I think whether it's the production on the field or just the way you're supposed to carry yourself, the way you're supposed to approach every situation that the White Sox have been in since he's been signed, and it's been a bunch of different ones, he's really just kind of showing everybody how they're supposed to go about their business. It's what Jose Abreu has been complimented for doing for years and years and years as a leader on this White Sox team. I think Elvis has brought the similar thing.
And it's funny we mentioned the age, and you know, even the talks when Kenny Williams talked to the team in the clubhouse back in, what was that, July or June, the whole talk was that there was cliques and no leaders in the White Sox clubhouse. But you bring up the average age and where the White Sox sit, and you talk about all the veteran leaders they have, to Joe Kelly, to Johnny Cueto, to Lance Lynn, to Elvis Andrus. It just seems shocking that Elvis Andrus not at that point, but still now at this point, him being on the team, like, it was a shocking report, because it's like, well, they have Jose Abreu, they have Tim Anderson, and they have all these, you know, veteran leaders. It was just an odd report.
I mean, it probably was, you know, heard through the grapevine in a way that it maybe came out a little garbled. You know, maybe it's not that there is no leadership, but there's, you know, the leadership is not doing this very specific thing that they need to be doing right now. And obviously we saw that from the way that the results played out over the course of the summer. But you're right, Elvis Andrus has fit into that group of guys who anybody on the team can look to and say, that's the way that you're supposed to be doing things.
You stumping for Elvis Andrus to be back?
Not really. I mean, it's just another guy who had a great year. And I feel the same way about Johnny Cueto, where they had great years for the White Sox, but I think moving forward from them is what the White Sox should do. I mean, great. Awesome job. And Elvis Andrus, if he comes back, will have to play a totally different position that he's ever played in his major league career before at second base. So, no, I would have Elvis Andrus a farewell. Hopefully he signs a nice contract with some other team. Same thing with Johnny Cueto, but not with the White Sox. But if they do come back, I'll be like, fine. It's all right. I'm not stumping for him, though. I'm not going on the table for those two guys.
Yeah, and you kind of talked about it recently in your piece where you looked at the White Sox for 2023 and how things might change. It still seems like second base is one of those spots that are opening, and it seems like Elvis Andrus has said that he's willing to move, maybe not next year, but we'll see how that plays off during the offseason. And, I mean, Elvis Andrus, the quote that we heard was that it's the most talented team that he's ever been on, so maybe he doesn't want to leave that. Let's go and now talk a little bit about the Sox. 79-80, they got three more games against the Minnesota Twins on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. The Twins sitting at 77-82, so really the only thing Sox are playing for being eliminated from the playoffs is staying above 500, one game below 500. Do you think they get there? Is it that much important? Do you care if they get to 500 or not?
Not really. For me, it doesn't matter. I mean, you could say, you know, if you're trying to say, okay, this is a very disappointing season, the fact that we finish under 500 too, you can add on another layer to that. But otherwise, this is going to be a disappointing season even if they get over 500. And Minnesota's not playing for anything. They're just playing for second place if they pass the White Sox. I don't know why you would do that. You don't get any special, like, prize for getting second place. You can hang the banner up if you want to. But other than that, no, I don't care if the White Sox actually win these games. I just want the effort. That's all I need.
Well, the only thing that you would be playing for is MLB draft lottery standings. Right now, the Sox are 15th in the lottery. Minnesota's 14th. So the Sox would need to go, I think, 0-3 against the Twins to jump them. And we almost saw them do that last time they played Minnesota. So we'll see what happens in this upcoming series. But the big news coming from USA Today's Bob Nightingale. The story is Tony La Russa. Let me want to get the real headline. Tony La Russa expected to announce retirement Monday as White Sox manager. Bob starts off by saying it was one of baseball's greatest feel-good stories, with Hall of Fame manager coming out of retirement to lead his old team to a World Series title. Only it didn't turn out the way it was supposed to. As we said, you know, the White Sox right now, really the last thing you're looking for is can they finish above 500? So clearly didn't turn out the way they wanted to. How shocked were you, Herb, when you saw this pop up on your timeline this morning from Bob Nightingale?
Not too shocked, because I knew that, you know, the reports had been out that he is not returning for next year from multiple sources. But when you get it from Bob Nightingale, you know it's pretty much from the source. So, you know, it's going to be happening. So it's good for Tony that he is retiring. Good for the White Sox that they're moving on from him. I hope he has a healthy, happy life moving forward from there. And he has they bid him adieu tomorrow like he's supposed to. He's still a Hall of Famer. When they go to his plaque, they got to put those years of 21 and 22 in there on his plaque, and he won an AL Central championship for the White Sox. So overall, a disappointment, a failure overall, but Tony La Russa wasn't coming back here to ruin the White Sox, like most White Sox fans think. He tried to do his damnedest, and it didn't work out for the White Sox. I don't wish the man any ill will. I just love that the fact that they're moving on from him, and hopefully they get a person that is much better suited for this club in particular moving forward so they can win next year.
Were you surprised by the news?
I wouldn't say I've been surprised. I think that when I look at it from solely the lens of Tony La Russa, the person that I have grown to know over the last couple of years by covering him every day, when he cannot be managing in the dugout, it must be serious. That's what it says to me. I don't buy the whole, conspiracy theories of, like, they're taking this opportunity with his health to force him out. I think that Tony La Russa is so, I've used the phrase before, addicted to managing a baseball team, that if there was any wiggle room given by his doctors, he would have been back in the dugout as soon as he possibly could. I truly believe that he was just waiting for the green light, and he would have been there the next day to keep managing this team down the stretch this year. He never got it. And according to Bob's report, the doctors are who are keeping him from coming back next year. If he's announcing his retirement because his doctors said it would not be a good medically advisable for you to keep managing like this. And I've talked about it before on this show. I mean, the stress and the odd hours and the travel and what that can do to someone whose body is not cooperating with them 100%. It's not the kind of job that you want, or the kind of stress level that you want if you're dealing with something like that. So I feel bad for Tony, because I think this is his love, and his health is preventing him from doing the thing he loves right now. If you take a wider step back and look at it from the White Sox standpoint, I think well before he had to go take care of this on August 30th, there was a pretty wide, certainly a wide consensus in the fan base, but even with plenty of observers, that this was a possibility, if not a probability. And, for Tony La Russa's time managing the White Sox to be over here speaks to how disappointing the tenure was. I don't think anybody should lose sight of the fact that they won the division last year, and that was the first time they'd done so in a long, long time, over a dozen years. That doesn't happen very often on the South Side, and he was at the helm when it happened, however much credit you want to give. But the White Sox, no bones about it, should have been a team that contended for a World Series championship this year. They were far, far from it. And if you take out everything with the health, everything with Tony's, the circumstances of his hiring, and everything with how the fans thought about Tony La Russa, when a team disappoints in this grandiose of a fashion, this happens in baseball.
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely.
And I don't, and again, when I say this, I just mean the managerial tenure coming to an end. I don't think it's coming to an end for that reason primarily. I believe the primary reason is the health situation. But like I said, we were talking about this day coming well before that health situation came about there at the end of August. And here we are whether we thought this was going to be where the way we got here or not, I don't think you can be surprised by this being the end destination of this season.
Tony was the big fish catch at that point, and he was the big fish catch because they thought he would bring a winning mentality, and you look back at the tenure, and there was no playoff series wins, and I think that was the goal, was to win playoff series, win playoff games, and hopefully win a World Series with Tony La Russa, and they just failed at reaching that.
That was his area of expertise, right? Is like, I mean, seriously, like, yeah. if you were to say, like, all the things that people said when the hire happened, right? Like, ooh, I don't know if this is going to work like this, but this is going to work like this. And let's remember, too, that Tony, to his credit, said that all those criticisms and all those questions were valid and that he was looking to prove everybody wrong. He didn't do that on a lot of fronts. He did do so on others. But the one thing that everybody could agree on when he was hired was, well, that guy knows how to win a World Series. That guy knows how to, you know, win a playoff team. He knows what to do in October with winning teams. And you mentioned it, the way that they fizzled out against Houston last year, and then obviously no opportunity to even reach the playoffs this year. The one thing that you brought him in to do, win the World Series, fell far, far from that goal.
Yeah, and I do want to color people just with a little bit more details about what Tony might be going through. This is, again, from Bob Nightingale's report in USA Today. Tony planned on returning to fulfill his contract in 2023, but he was in his office on August 29th. That was before the Royals game. About an hour before the game, he received a telephone call from his doctors, was instructed to leave the ballpark immediately, go home, and then come in the next day for testing. He was on a flight the next day back to Arizona and then underwent a procedure to repair his heart pacemaker. Then, as we know, on September 10th, the Sox were playing the A's. Dave Stewart had his retirement party. Tony was there for the celebration, and then it was the last time he was on the team. He returned with the Sox for two games. Last time he was with the team, and then he returned to Arizona, underwent more testing, and then there was further procedures. The doctor sat him down and provided their medical expert opinion, saying he should not manage ever again. So it's just Tony getting the very strong words from his doctor saying no, and pulling him away. And the way that you describe him too, it feels like he would need medical clearance to pull him away from that dugout. Like you said, Herb, I mean, he gave everything at least to the White Sox, and his just heart gave out on him. This is interesting, I think, from James Fegan, who's out in San Diego. Miguel Cairo said he saw the news on Tony La Russa via the Bob Nightingale story like everyone else. Cairo gave an interesting answer on whether this same player group will be back next season. He put a big emphasis on better accountability. Quote, I think they got the message what there is to expect. Whoever is going to manage or whoever is going to be hired or whoever is going to be there, I know they're going to be expecting something a little different. It's going to be more people accountable for doing their job. I think it's going to change. It's going to be a little bit different. It happened because you go to the playoffs 2 years in a row and all of a sudden you feel like you didn't make it this year. You can see what went wrong. It's going to be some people accountable for the job that they're going to do. I hope there is. So we talked about accountability a lot this year, and it kind of faded away a little bit. But now Miguel Cairo bringing back up that word accountability. So that is, I might be something the White Sox be looking for these players to take a little bit more accountability if there's a new managerial change.
Yeah, and I don't know how, I've never been in the White Sox clubhouse with Tony La Russa as the guy on the helm, but to me, Tony seemed like a player's manager, where not a lot of things, you know, like not a lot of hammer was going down when people made mistakes, when people, you know, did certain things. And I'm not necessarily a punitive guy, but I don't know if we ever seen a thing where he called somebody out. But this might have happened in the clubhouse. I mean, he did it, of course, with Yermín last year, but I'm talking about this year specifically. So, yeah, maybe the accountability had slipped this year and Tony was being a softer, gentler guy, trying to, have himself be more of a team guy, more of a player guy. And then from all the reports that you've said, Vinny, that all these guys loved him. And they loved him to a point where you see things going wrong with the club and you thought you would hear some whispers like, hey, Tony's fucking up. And you would usually hear that, you know, when a manager's lost the clubhouse. I don't think I've ever really heard that definitively, that these players didn't like Tony La Russa. So he was a player's manager. And I think maybe in some of that, accountability was lost, where the players didn't really get, you know, censured or punished or whatever word you want to use for messing up, for coming short of expectations. So I don't know if Miguel's talking about that, because if he's speaking about it, he obviously saw it. And there was a lack of accountability on that team. I don't know if he's just talking about Tony or he's talking about organizational wide, because I could say that. Me and you have both said that, and I think that accountability is a big-time thing with this team. I mean, the general manager, the baseball player ops, this is a mess that they have, too. They should have some accountability. We know that they're pretty much going to be coming back with Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn, but accountability should be on their plate, too.
Well, it seemed like a weird kind of dynamic because Tony always referred to it as the family, and the clubhouse is the family. He did it in 2021. He did it in 2022. And when the Yermin stuff happened in Minnesota, he said that there would be spankings for the family, and right, that the family has to hand out that discipline. So maybe that family unit broke down a little bit. I'm not sure. I mean, maybe that's what we could be thinking, is that the family unit broke down and they weren't keeping each other as accountable as they were in 2020 and 2021.
I think, I don't know, Vinny can speak to it more than I can. So that's just my outside view of what happened this year in 2020. Because 2021, with the Yermin thing, I didn't disagree with it, but at least there was something. Like, Tony's an old school. This is what we do in the old school. You do not hit 3-0, especially when I give you the take sign. Do not do that. And, you know, if you do, there's going to be punishments. You're going to be sitting down. Minnesota Twins are going to hit you, and I'm going to say, cool. I didn't agree with any of that, but at least you saw that he was setting the standard from what he expected of his team. So this year I didn't see that much of that stuff.
I would say there's a few things to that. I mean, I think that your speculation, you know, is based on the fact that, yeah, you didn't see anything from Tony in that regard this year. I didn't see anything from Tony in regard to that this year. The one thing that I do remember is after the Johnny Cueto fire comments, mm-hmm. Tony's reaction was, we need to keep that in-house. And so we don't know what's going on behind closed doors. You know what I mean? Maybe, yeah. Maybe, you know, Tony's mad that Tony was not happy that was being said in a public setting. Doesn't mean that any number of things weren't being said in a private setting. But also, you know, it doesn't mean that they were either. So, you know, we can't really talk on that. We can only speculate.
Well, it seemed like the only thing that changed with Miguel Cairo was they needed to hear it from a different voice or a different tone, that the same things were being said.
That's what they said. I mean, we got more of a glimpse at it because of what Miguel told us, or, you know, like he was saying, he went out in that speech and said, right when Tony left and called out what he didn't like, things that he had been seeing for a while, but he didn't say because he was giving respect and deference to Tony La Russa, things that were boiling over that for him. He said, if you don't want to be here, get out. And if you do, then stay and we'll go. But then, you know, he ran the same lineup out there every day. I mean, and again, that's not to say that there was any reason for him not to, but, people were pleased by hearing that from Miguel, but the actual results, the actual end game didn't really seem like anything changed big time there. I mean, I go back to Ricky Renteria, who was benching guys for not running the first base, who was benching, you know, Avi Garcia when Avi was battling a leg injury, mm-hmm. you know, benched him for not running out to first base, and he did that many times. That's the kind of thing that people are talking about, maybe. I think in a lot of cases, Tony didn't have a roster wiggle room to do that on a very regular basis. I think Tony is probably also better at reading these guys than people give him credit for, and maybe determined, well, that didn't work. That's not going to work if I bench, you know, Yaz for not getting hits. Like, I mean, right. Like, that is that the kind of punitive thing you want? I mean, yeah, they're making fielding mistakes, they're making base running mistakes. That's been a story of the whole season, but it's been a story with everybody all season long. And, you know, you're gonna bench the whole team. Like, we've talked about how thin the depth is at a lot of different positions, and then you throw all the injuries they had on top of it. Who's he benching guys for? You know what I mean? Do you want to see a lot of Adam Haseley out there? Right. Is that the idea? Like
Adam Engel, like, I think started like maybe 5 games or something since the All-Star break. Like, it's just
Adam Engel wasn't hitting.
Right.
I mean,
he's not catching balls either.
Yeah.
Same thing with Lurie.
No, he's not. But yeah, I mean, it was a tough situation, I think, but also people are looking for things to pick apart about it. Was Tony La Russa a good fit for this team? I don't know. I mean, if you're asking me that question, listen, when he was hired, wouldn't have been my first choice.
Right.
But I think that a lot of the things that he said in the immediate aftermath of that hiring and then throughout the first half of last season, you know, I think kind of did away with some of those big concerns that I and a lot of other people had. And then this year comes along. And this year, I think people are playing a little bit more scapegoat with him, as any fan base would in a year like this. But listen, that's where the buck stops, at the manager's desk. And there's no doubt about it. Something on this team was not working. Something on this team was badly broken this year. And if Tony La Russa is the one who pays the price for that, again, that's not why he's reportedly leaving. But if we're talking in the pre-medical leave world, then that is maybe not something that shouldn't have been very surprising.
Well, and Tom Jankowski's asking, who's your first choice for manager? We'll talk about a little bit of that in a second. But even to talk about that, like, I think, you know, it shouldn't be Tony La Russa as the only scapegoat. Like, there should be a higher price to pay. I mean, Rick Hahn, two winning seasons in his 10 years as general manager. He just had the highest payroll of his tenureship, and he, you know, might produce a team with a losing record. I mean, like, that's also the depth, the lack of, you know, straining your manager like that with moves. And, you know, I think of Luis Robert playing when he couldn't actually swing the bat. Like, that's, you're hampering your manager in a decision like that. And, you know, obviously the roster's expanded from 26 to 28, making it a little bit easier, but I think that's part of the whole issue. It's not just Tony, it's not just Kenny, it's not just Rick, it's not just the players. Like, this whole organization stinks, and we have to figure it out. What doesn't stink, though, Green Ridge Farm is a Chicago local meat and cheese company offering you a better all-natural option. They're the makers of all-natural deli meat. You can find them at Jewel's Sausage as well. You can find those at Jewel, and their famous meat sticks. The meat sticks are perfect for tailgating, happy hour, and school lunches. We're going to be having our next Bears tailgate, our next CHGO Bears tailgate on November 6th. We'll probably be grilling up all these famous meat sticks. They come in chicken, Black Forest beef, and flavors like jalapeno cheddar and spicy chili. If you haven't tried them yet, you don't know what you're missing out on. They're my favorite snack. I'm pretty lazy. I just like to throw them in the microwave for about 30 seconds, and boom, I have nice, delicious, fresh meat just to enjoy. It is fantastic, and they are delicious because they're made from recipes generations in the making, and being all natural, they deliver a fresh and flavorful alternative at snack time. You can always find them in the refrigerated section at Costco, Sam's Club, or in your local Chicago grocery store. And right now, when you order any three meat products at greenridgefarm.com and include a pack of meat sticks in your cart, those meat sticks will be free simply by using the code CHGO at checkout. Again, if you order any three meat products at greenridgefarm.com and include a pack of meat sticks in your cart, those meat sticks will be free simply by using the code CHGO at checkout. Thank you very much, Sarah. Again, CHGO at checkout. Three meat products at greenridgefarm.com. Include a pack of meat sticks, and those meat sticks will be free. A little bit different. Not meat, but AG1. I also include this into my diet, and I start my day with this. And I've been starting my day with AG1s for over 6 months now. They've been a very long supporter here at CHGO. I started taking AG1s when we started this company back in March 4th. They were one of our first ever people to give us free samples. I used those free samples and just loved the way it gave me more energy when I woke up. And it's very simple. I just pour a little bit, a scoop of AG1s into my water, and I absorb 70 high quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source, superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens. It helps me wake up. It provides me energy for my day, helps my nervous system, my immune system, and again, my energy. And I feel great when I wake up 9:30, take this AG1, start my day right. It's lifestyle friendly, whether you eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, or gluten-free. And Athletic Greens has over 7,002 five-star reviews. I put it in my water. Herb puts it into the smoothies. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop of a cup of water every day. That's it. No needs for millions of different pills and supplements to look out for your health. And to make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/CHGOSOCKS. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/CHGOSOCKS to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. All right, let's talk about the manager. And I want to go to five reasons why Tony La Russa doesn't fit the White Sox description of an ideal manager.
Who, what bozo would have written that?
Vinny La Russa. Vinny Duber.
Why is that my last name?
I've been doing that a couple times.
Herb. That's Herb. Herbie La Russa.
I've been calling you a couple times. Sometimes we go out.
You calling me that?
Well, on accident. Like, we'll go out to Guarantee Rate Field. I'll be like, all right, we'll go out to Guarantee Rate Field to talk to Vinny La Russa. Oh. And I'm like, oh, that's not his name. Just because I'm like, oh, we'll go talk to Vinny about Tony. And then I just combined the names. And I did it again. But you said on October 28th, Tony La Russa's name pops up yet again. Wrote a little bit why he doesn't seem to fit the Sox own description of their ideal managerial candidate.
This was on October 28th of 2020?
This was on October 28th.
Literally one day before he was hired.
The description by
what
Bob
timing?
The description by Bob Nightingale was, quote, it's La Russa's job to lose. Here are the reasons why Tony La Russa doesn't fit the White Sox description of an ideal manager. And let's start the first one. Recent experience with a championship organization. So we know last time that he was, obviously with a championship organization, Cardinals have the second most World Series in Major League Baseball, just behind the Yankees, but still recent.
Recent managerial experience.
Managerial experience.
Because he was part of that Red Sox front office when they won the World Series. Yeah.
But managerial experience 10 years out. I think that it was very clear that Tony was 10 years out. And we saw that in the second month that he was managing, where he really didn't understand the extra runner rules. And I think
James Fegan, who schooled him on one of the rules.
I don't know if James was trying to school him, but just ask him a question.
Not disrespectful. Out,
but yeah. I don't think James meant that to get as heated as it did. But I think, you know, that kind of reared its head kind of early. And I, as somebody who gets offended by old school baseball managering, I didn't love the way Tony La Russa kind of attacked managing baseball. And I didn't really enjoy watching Tony La Russa's teams in 2021 and 2022. A reason why they're probably looking for recent managerial experience. Did you see that played out negatively, that he didn't have recent managerial experience?
Oh, yeah. I thought that with the hiring of Tony La Russa, they would insulate. Then they would have people who are young, vibrant, fresh, knew the rules of baseball that have changed since Tony has left the game. And, you know, Tony had kept up with the game, as Vinny said. He was in front offices with a lot of teams, the D-backs, the Angels, the Red Sox. But, you know, it's a difference from being in the clubhouse and the dugout than being upstairs. So I thought they would, like, help him out with the new rules, the changes that have been implemented since he had last been in the dugout. But, you know, I was not too worried about Tony La Russa doing that. My big thing for Tony La Russa was culture and changing the dynamic of what the culture was in the White Sox clubhouse, where Tim and Jose were the leaders and they had fun. It's the change of the game team. And I thought Tony's going to come in here and just throw water on that fire. But for the most part, the players loved him. And I don't think the culture changed, the winning changed this year, but last year, winning was still going on.
Liam Hendricks described it to me at one point this year as Tony's doing all the weird stuff that he's done throughout his whole career, and this year it's just not working.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, like...
Like, I think Tony has this reputation as someone who does a bunch of stuff where if you're watching the game, you go, what's this now? What's this move now? And for decades, it worked. He was, you know, managing some of the best teams in baseball over the course of his Hall of Fame career. And then he comes back after a decade-long absence, and you can talk about the changes that have come to the game, whether it's that or just bad luck. The weird stuff that he does when he manages didn't work this time around.
And the weird stuff, I think that we could kind of line out, would be the consistent lineup changes. We would just see, you know, kind of a scattering of guys, a rotating.
Don't think that's a problem.
You don't think that's a problem? Well, I mean, I think that would be at least
the other side of town and what Joe Maddon did when he was the Cubs manager. They had a different lineup every day.
Yeah, but then the Cubs players ended up complaining about that in 17, 18, and 19. The fact
after the wins dried up.
But also, I think
more,
you know, yeah, those were guys. I mean, I would just say that even Joe Maddon, who recently just got fired because, you know, the analytics department was too in his business, mm-hmm, as a manager, I would just say that it probably goes away from recent managerial thinking. His weird stuff. The weird stuff would be the lineup stuff, and then the intentional walk stuff. I mean, I'm just trying to outline some
first
of the weird
one, I think,
stuff.
I think the first one, I don't remember the second one. I don't think I was working that day.
It was in Cleveland. It was not that. I think the first one.
The first one, at this point, has been overblown. In the moment, it was very weird. But I think at this, what everybody has forgotten or didn't even know in the first place was that the decision was made after first base became open.
Yes.
And Muncy, who ended up hitting the big home run, had been awful.
I think he was
his
the first,
numbers were bad.
I think there was, like, he's since 2016 or 2014, it's like the fourth time that's happened. And Tony La Russa has done two of them. So it's just more of Tony kind of being that weird guy and maybe trying to figure out things that people aren't doing, or, you know, like, I mean, he's just done stuff that, you know, no manager has done. I'm just trying to think of some of the other weird things.
Thinking about the thing that I found the most egregious that Tony did this year in game was the pitching to Byron Buxton with first base open. And then, like, the subsequent walking of Trey Turner to have him go to first base on a 1-2 count. So it wasn't consistent with me. I was like, yes, I know Luis Arraez is on deck, but if I had my choice, I'm choosing to go against Luis Arraez with a bases loaded instead of Byron Buxton with guys on second and third. The inconsistency of his thoughts were my problem there. And I think the weird stuff that Tony did worked out in his life and his career because he had boppers and people who did the jobs of hitting the ball over the park, over the fence. Last year he had that. With his Cardinals teams he had that. And, of course, with his Oakland teams he had that. So, you know, the weird stuff, it might have been looked weird to other people, you know, batting the pitcher eighth. But those things worked out for him eventually. And he ingratiated himself to the players. And so they gave great effort because they wanted to win for Tony. And then if he would mess up, like last year, there's a couple of things he messed up. The White Sox would overhit or overpitch his mistakes.
And what we could see, too, is Tony had a high affirmation for platoon splits and making sure that a lefty was facing a lefty or a righty was facing a righty if he was going to a pitching change or if, you know, it was a right-handed starter that Gavin Sheets was in the lineup and that Leary was in the lineup and Moncada and Grandal so we could have that balanced lineup. I just think that with the implementation of the universal DH, his kind of leverage there with lineup tweaking really didn't mean too much. And then also, like, a big thing of him was like his bullpen usage, and bullpen usage has just been limited with the now 3 batter minimum. So I just think that he wasn't, you know, Tony La Russa was limited on being able to cook, right? Tony La Russa wasn't able to be Tony La Russa because the game just drastically changed over 10 years, which is why they were looking for somebody with recent experience.
I mean, didn't he the innovator of the righty righty lefty lefty thing coming out of the bullpen? Yeah. Like, he was the guy who first did that, and I'm sure people at the time were like, this guy, come on, man. Why is he using all these fucking people? Come on. Just use your starter. And it worked out for him. His bullpens were awesome. Changing Eck from a starter to a Hall of Fame reliever. That's Tony La Russa. So these things, you'll work for him, and that's why he's got a plaque in Cooperstown right now. But this year, I think, for the most part, the problem with the White Sox and the problem with the results were the White Sox didn't hit the ball over the fence. It.
Right. Yeah, and yep. You know, obviously that's got to change with managers and players as well.
I that would have listen. We talked to all year long how much that would have covered up some of the blemishes on this team, and certainly managerial moves that do not work out would have been one of those things that was covered up because you give up, you know, or you know, Tony makes a move, it doesn't work, the game tips in the you know over a run or two. You're supposed to have guys that can come up and hit 3 home runs in an inning and erase that. Well, and the White Sox didn't do that.
Not over 20. That's still amazing to me.
Yeah, right. And it's going to be the first time since 1990. And you just recently had an article, too, where you put together quotes of guys talking about the end of the season and what it meant. And I think Joe Kelly kind of talked about what you were saying, where, like, the home runs weren't coming, or you get a home run and then the bullpen blows it. He said it's one of those things where if you're going through a period of time where everything's not clicking for one part or a unit of the team, sometimes we had 2/3 of the team clicking, whether it be position players and starters or bullpens and starters or position players and bullpens. It just hasn't been 3 out of 3 things that we've been looking for. So it just really didn't seem like the team was clicking in general. And you know, we saw that even in the 10-7 game where the White Sox take the lead and then the White Sox blow the lead. And then the White Sox weren't able to secure that victory and then Cleveland, and then they lost 8 straight. Let's move on to the next point that you had. The second one was it will more than likely be someone from the outside. And the quote from Rick Hahn was, "This is an opportunity for us as an organization. We've been obviously been somewhat insular in terms of our managerial hirings over the last 7 years. This is an opportunity for us to speak to individuals with other organizations that have had success and learn from them and get their sort of outsider objective perspective on our organization." Clearly, the White Sox didn't go outside of the organization going with Tony La Russa, who managed last in 1986. I think this is probably the White Sox fans' biggest want in a new manager is somebody from the outside.
I'm just hearing Ozzie and AJ constantly.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I wish they can get out of that. I mean, I love Ozzie, but I don't think he's the right for this team. I love him in the role he's in, and AJ's never managed a second in his life. I'm good. I'm really good on him. And the outside perspective that Rick was talking about, you had in the article, is exactly what they needed. You saw this year when they got outside perspective from their players in Johnny Cueto and Elvis Andrus, other players, and Liam Hendricks, who came from a different organization. Even Dallas Keuchel, you don't like him, he felt that this, how they went about their business, wasn't the way they went about their business in Houston. Same thing with Kendall Graveman, who said that Houston does things different than anybody else in his career, and he wanted that implemented here in Chicago. So, yes, you need some outside influence. We talk about this organization being so insular and so, hey, this is what we do. This is White Sox baseball, and it hasn't worked out. I mean, we've been to the playoffs, what, 11 times in the history of the game? And 7 under Jerry Reinsdorf in his 40 years of being the owner, that's not a lot. It's not this franchise for overall is pretty much a failure. You need somebody from the outside to say, this is how we play winning baseball from Houston, even though you might say they cheated. From the Yankees, even though you think they might have cheated. From the Mets. You know, somebody else that, you know, that wins on a constant basis, and you're like, I like that. Even if it's the Cardinals, even though I don't like the Cardinal way, you need somebody else that's coming in and saying, hey, this is how baseball is played. This is how we've won this many pennants, and I know how to get you guys to the next level.
Or even just add one thing. You know what I mean? Like, if memory serves, that quote, that part of that that Rick was talking about, he expressed the idea of just how interviewing people from other organizations would have been so valuable for them. You know what I mean? Not and Tony, you know, being basically given the job by Jerry right out of the gate, as per a lot of reporting from Bob Nightingale and others, maybe they didn't even get to have that managed, that interview experience with a lot of other people and get a lot of other ideas to even just think about.
Hold on. Let's go to Bob Nightingale's report today, because I think this is a great point that you bring up, because I think you're nailing it on the head. The White Sox will now be looking for their fourth manager in 8 seasons. White Sox GM Rick Hahn originally wanted to hire AJ Hinch instead of La Russa, but it would have made no difference. They will soon begin formulating a managerial list of managerial candidates, including everyone from Bruce Bochy, Mike Schilt, Joe Espada to George Lombard. One man who could be a perfect fit is Carlos Beltran. And he goes and explains Carlos Beltran being hired by the Mets and then being removed after the 2017 cheating scandal. But what I want to go to is another report from Vinny Duber back on October 29th, according to USA Today's Bob Nightingale, Tony La Russa was the number one choice to succeed Rick Renteria, and Nightingale added that the White Sox never formally interviewed AJ Hinch. So on the 29th, they never even talked to AJ Hinch, somebody who had that outside experience, somebody who had prior managerial experience, somebody who was a World Series champion, and as Bob Nightingale states here, that's the guy Rick wanted, and they never even interviewed him. So I just think that going to that, like, they wanted to do this interview process the right way, and I think they got, again, hamstrung by being too insular and going back to the well, the Tony La Russa well again.
And as Vinny was saying, it's like data mining. You're trying to get information even from the guys that you know are not going to be White Sox managers in the future. You're trying to see, okay, we can use that. Thank you for that. You're not getting the job, but get out of here. I'm going to write that down and pass it on. We're going to be implementing that into our system and just getting different ideas of how outside people think about your organization and maybe changing your organization because of the opinions of these people who you are, you respect, because you're bringing them in for interviews and you're talking to them. And who'd they talk to? Tony and just Willie Harris? Was that the only people they talked to?
No, there was the finalists, I think, were Tony, Willie Harris, and let me find the other name.
Just like, it's like, you know.
I think it was Bochy was the second finalist.
You need to cast a wide net. And if even if you have, and the reason why we got Ozzie Guillen is because Jerry put his 2 cents in and said, hey, Kenny, maybe since you're interviewing Cito Gasson, I know you want to go with Cito, just give Ozzy humor him. Give him an interview and see what you think. You need to cast a wide net, and maybe you'll find another Ozzie Guillen, a guy that leads a team to a World Series. And maybe the person that you thought was the perfect fit before you start interviewing everybody was interviewing terribly, and now you don't want to get that guy, and now you go see some other people. You need to cast a wide net because you know this is still the window, and you need to get the right person. So when you hire this person, White Sox fans will be like, okay, that guy will not cost us games. He might win us a couple games. At minimum, he'll be a non-factor in the moving forward of the White Sox.
Yeah, Bob Nightingale on the 30th said, so you wonder who would be the White Sox have turned to if Tony said no. Future Hall of Famer Bruce Bochy was next on their wish list. So I think it would have gone La Russa, Bochy, Willie Harris, if we're just piecing together reports here. But I do want to go to your point about Ozzie Guillen. I want to go to your point about Ozzie Guillen. The third point, Ozzie Guillen will not be a candidate for the job. Ozzie just stumped on White Sox Talk, the pregame show, saying that no one knows the White Sox organization better than Ozzie Guillen, that he knows those players. I just I think that we could write him off. If you're going to bring up Ozzie Guillen to us on the live chat, I'm not reading it. I'm not even if it's a super chat, I'm not acknowledging it. Ozzie Guillen got a phone call before they even started the managerial search and said, you are not going to be the manager. He's not going to be the manager. I'd be shocked. More shocked than Tony La Russa being managed in manager in 2020.
Well, I guess the point, right, the point for people who I mean, people are going to want that of their own opinion, but when you're talking about the realistic outcome, what about 2 years ago made Ozzie, you know, a non-starter that would suddenly open the door for him now? And I think you're exactly right. The organization is going to be in the exact same mindset as it was then. I don't think all of a sudden it's like, oh well, you know what we need now is Ozzie, right? they're probably looking for somebody who's more of a long term fit, I would imagine.
The fourth part was,
I think Ozzie would be a great manager from some other team. He's got a great legacy here. I know fans want him because of the success he had 2005, 2008, a little less, but it's time. It's like, as with Tony La Russa, Ozzie hasn't managed in a long while. It's like 2012.
Yeah.
He hasn't managed.
That's 1 year.
He's younger, yeah.
That's one year more recent than Tony.
Yeah, and so, yes.
And a World Series.
He knows these players.
Far longer away.
He's Ozzie Guillen. He's funny. And what he does in the postgame, I think, is perfect for him. But his quotes aren't wrong, where he says he knows the players better than everybody else, doesn't mean that he should be the head boss.
Right. And if you're trying to not be insular, I mean, that's just, again, going against insular.
Well, and also, he knows them better than everybody. What does that mean?
Like, I don't know.
Just because he shows up at the park every once in a while?
Just because he has the pregame show and I guess watches these guys.
Like,
I mean,
aren't there a lot of people who currently work for the team that know the players a lot more than he does?
He said there's nobody in baseball that knows the team better than him.
Is Miguel Cairo in baseball?
No.
Is Joe McEwing in baseball?
Nope.
I'm not saying these guys should be candidates, but like...
Daryl Boston also not in baseball.
Just not true.
Yeah, just not true. but it's Ozzie being Ozzie, baby. And I hope we don't have Ozzie being Ozzie in the White Sox dugout. The fourth reason was change the game. The White Sox definitely didn't change the game. And I don't even know if they want to even go with that slogan, because I don't know what the White Sox mission is now. Because, like, obviously it was change the game. It was play with all this swag, but... To play with swag, you need to hit home runs. It just kind of feels like you need to rebuild it. You know,
you need to build it up from the ground up. You don't think they could turn that switch back on if they started winning again? I think they could. It's all the same guys, right?
Yeah, but
I'm just talking from an attitude standpoint.
Yeah, but yeah, I think it's all about turning that switch on, and I don't know how easy it is to flip that switch because
it proved
it
to be very difficult this year. But the bottom line is, when I look at this roster, I still see a roster that is capable of doing the things that they thought they were going to be able to do this year. But they need to play vastly better. You know what I mean? Obviously, they did not play anything close to championship-caliber baseball this year. The question I keep posing to people is, do you think this collection of players is capable of doing that?
No. I think,
why?
I think the fact that you had two...
If they played at the high end of their thing. I mean, you know, obviously, the picture has changed dramatically, but it doesn't mean that it still can't turn out that same way. It shouldn't. They shouldn't just be like, oh, we're standing pat. You know what I mean? They should continue to improve the roster as it goes along, of course. But I don't think you can look at all these players and be like, well, they were all awful this year, so they're never going
to
be good.
I mean, you saw the glimpse of the change to the game, the swagger in the New York Yankees series where Tim hits that late home run where you're like, okay, he's gotten talked about from these people. They're chanting Jackie all day long. Everybody who's the White Sox is behind them. You go out and have a great outing from Michael Kopech, and then Tim hits that home run, pretty much putting the cherry on top of that sundae. It was like, here we go. This is the White Sox team that I remember. This is the White Sox team that was swaggy, led by Tim Anderson. And they can get right back to that. If Tim Anderson comes back being him, same thing with all the rest of the players. We've had, like, very low numbers. I mean, Jose Abreu hit 15 home runs. 15 home runs this year. That, I don't think that's a thing. I think if he comes back next year, he's back to his regular 30 and 100.
He hit 15 home runs while having a really good year.
Yeah.
Like, it's so weird.
Well, I mean, I think what now, at this point, it's been 55 games, and he has one home run in his last 55
that's
games.
Crazy.
And that's not him.
Well, and he just set a career high in walks. He just took a 61st walk, which is a career high.
And
so,
I think he changed his game to accommodate what the team was lacking in that time. He, at the beginning of the year, was doing the regular Jose Abreu things, wasn't having his regular season. You know, April and May kind of starts off slow. He saw the need for getting on base. He changed his game. Higher on base this year.
This game
and probably sacrifice a little power to get on base a little bit more. So, yes, I think the White Sox can get back to change the game. I think that's easy, especially as Vinny says. Winning. cures a lot of ails. Like if they start, if Aloy plays 140 games next year and Aloy is Aloy, the second half guy, you think he's not going to be high-momming all day? He's not going to be having fun? That locker room's not going to be energized? Or if Yoel Moncada's hitting 30 home runs, which is a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I don't think
you don't think the bachata's going to be playing? The reggaeton's going to be playing?
It can't get back, but that's a lot of what-ifs. I mean, like, yeah. I understand that you're saying, like, Jose Abreu changed his game, but also, what if he's just 36 years old, has played a ton of baseball in his life, and he is just truly running out of that stamina and strength to hit home runs?
He's not the guy you should be afraid of the what-if with.
It's the other
he's
guy.
He's Mr. Consistency.
Well, but if he's the other,
you can be shaking at your boots over Yoan Moncada and Yasmani Grandal and plenty of other guys on this team. Guys like Jose Abreu, I mean, that guy's been doing great work at the plate his entire career. He's not, and that's the main argument in terms of bringing him back. I think is that like, oh, you know what you're getting.
I just think it's very rose-colored glasses to be like, oh, Abreu next year, he did this all on purpose. He had 15 home runs on purpose because he wanted to get on base more. Like,
I don't think walking was on purpose.
Walking was on purpose, and I think he's been more selective. But also, like, what we've said is this team needs home runs. If Jose Abreu was going to do what the team needed, he would be hitting home runs. I just think that, again, he's just trying to get on and help the team in any way that he can. I just think that it's difficult. I don't think he has that same strength to drive balls. I just think that, really, that we've seen the exit velocity go down. Like, he's just really going for liners, smooth, sweet swings. It's been nice to watch, but I just don't know if that power is gonna come back. I think I don't know if he's toast, but I think clearly he's proven to be a capable first baseman, was willing and deserving of an all-star bid this year as well. Like, I mean, he was fantastic. It's just different than what the White Sox have been used to, that 30-100 guy. I don't know if that 30-100 guy is here anymore. We got a little bit more talk too, but this football season, PointsBet's bringing you a better way to bet live on games. That means before this ad's over, you can place a live same-game parlay bet on the next drive to be a touchdown and cash out your live second-half over bet. So whether you're on the move or on the couch, do it live on PointsBet. The Sunday night game is just about to start, so if you're looking for some action in the Tampa-Kansas City game, head over to PointsBet, download the app today, and sign up with code CHGO to get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. And if you or someone who has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER for crisis counseling and referral services. The final other things for Tony and the reasons that you listed were championship aspirations, the long term of this, and the Reinsdorf relationship. I don't know if there's too many people out there that would fit under this Jerry rule that happened with Tony, where they would bring him back. So I'm not too worried about Jerry making another hire like this. I think that there was one person that he could have done this with, and it was with Tony La Russa. When Rick Hahn brought up the idea of hiring Tony, he said initially, I think I was surprised, just given that I knew, obviously, that he was not only retired, but I knew that other clubs had reached out previously and were rebuffed. But then when I thought about the allure of this job, it all makes sense in the world. So I think there isn't really a white whale out there where there is a manager that could come out of nowhere. I don't think there's a Robin. I think AJ is pretty far-fetched. I think Ozzy's far-fetched. I think Paulie's far-fetched, right? I think it will be somebody with managerial experience and hopefully from the outside and that can bring a long-term view to the White Sox. Are there any names that immediately jump out to you that you'd want?
Joe Espada, who is the bench coach of Houston Astros, I would want him. And usually I would steer clear of people who have been accused of cheating. He was in that clubhouse when they were there. Same thing with Carlos Beltran, who also I would love for the White Sox to give an interview for and see what he's all about, see if he has any culpability, a little mea culpa. Hey, guys, I did this, did that with both the Red Sox and the Astros, but, I know how to win. I've been almost a Hall of Fame player. I understand these players in the clubhouse. I speak the language literally and figuratively, and I can get the guys to the next level. I just want somebody that is into the game, into the analytics, listening to other people around him, and being the bench boss, like the bench CEO. So having a lot of smart people around him and not being intimidated by those smart people on the bench and listening to their ideas. And at the end of the day, the buck stops with him. He has to give the decision for what's going down with the strategies and the lineups and all that stuff, like the pitching changes. But those type of guys who are, more analytically based, they've seen analytics work for their teams, like the Houston Astros and the Boston Red Sox. If we can get one of those two guys, I'll be very happy.
You have a person that's catching your interest at all?
I mean, I think Carlos Beltran is interesting. I really do. I think he's a guy that would really love that opportunity, be really excited about it. But I think that you're in kind of a, you know, talking out of both sides of your mouth situation. If what I'm about to say, and I'm sure a lot of fans agree, you want somebody who's going to bring new life and new blood and all of that. But also, like, don't you want somebody who knows what they're doing? But also, does anybody know what they're doing when it comes to managing a baseball team more than Tony La Russa? I mean, like,
yeah.
The point being that, like, you want somebody who knows what they're doing. You want that managerial experience because, hey, look, this is a team. Just push the right buttons and they're gonna go far. That was the idea with Tony. That was the idea was like, Tony, you know what buttons to push. You've done this a million times. Right. Here's this incredibly talented roster. Take it. You know what I mean? Take it and do it. Well, guess what? That didn't work. If you want somebody who's done this before and knows what they're doing, you know, if you want to go get, and I'm not saying they should, but here are names that are out there, Joe Madden or Joe Girardi or something like that. Those are guys that know what they're doing, but is that going to work? Is that just going to be Tony part two? Mm. But Carlos Beltran, okay, that sounds interesting. That sounds like he would be an exciting hire. Great to see what he would do with a lot of energy and stuff like that. But does he know what to do? It's a tough situation, and I don't think anybody they hire is going to be that slam dunk guy because nobody can fit both of those two things at the same time.
Amen. I think the issue is organizationally. You need to help the manager. You need to build out the analytics department. And we know that they have the smallest analytics department in Major League Baseball. You need to be stop being so insular, whether that be Chris Getz as your farm director, even though he's done a fine job. The two guys, Kenny and Rick, have been running this show together since 2012. Like, you need to get more insular even with that thought tank. I think that Chris Getz coming in has brought some nice ideas, and we see Project Birmingham come out of it. I just think that, you know, you need that ability to help everyone in the organization, help your players by bringing in, you know, people to help with swing planes and stuff like that. We see this with the Giants. Zahadi over there has brought in swing coaches, and, you know, we've seen the evolution of pitch labs and Ethan Katz's you know, improvement of Jimmy Lambert and Reynaldo Lopez through that. I think that now you need the swing doctor, right? I think they need to really build out this entire organization. There are things that the White Sox need that other MLB teams have that they're just not there yet. I don't think you need a one big flashy hire to go out and get the guy to fix all your problems, because your problems are much more than just the manager. It's the players. It's the depth on that team. It's the front office. It's the way these players are coached. It's the way that they are, you know, brought up from single A to the major leagues. I can see Garrett Crochet, Andrew Vaughn, Nick Madrigal as all like kind of red flags, like, whoa, what are you guys doing here, in the way that you're bringing them up to the majors. So I would just say that, you know, Carlos Beltran would be a great hire, but if you're just hiring Carlos Beltran to fix things, that's not going to happen, just like it didn't happen with Tony La Russa. You know, anyone in that job wouldn't have been able to succeed,
I think. And I also would like a manager that has done the job before, where Beltran and Espada have not done the job. So is there a guy, and I hate to go back to the Padres, but is there a guy that they can poach? Like the Padres poach Bob Melvin from the Oakland Athletics, a guy that is like really good at his job, that, you know, is just unsatisfied with the job that the team is doing and can be poached from that organization. And that guy might have some juice to do what you're talking about, where he changes the organization, and what he says is like, it flows down to the minor leagues. This is what we're going, this is the standard we're going to be setting. If you want me, this is what we're going to be doing moving forward. I'll have this type of person. This is my guy, and as the bench coach, I'll have this person as my pitching coach, which I would love Ethan Katz to come back. But if you're having a new bench boss, if that bench boss does not jibe with Ethan Katz, sorry, Ethan, you got to bounce. So if you're going to be hiring these guys, you got to give him the power to have his team that he wants. And especially if it's a big time manager, you got to have that manager fill out that roster. And I remember when they had Todd Steverson, his hitting standard went right down, all the way down to the minor leagues. I think Ethan Katz's standard goes right down to the minor leagues. They pitch the way Ethan Katz wants them to pitch, so they're ready when they get up to the major leagues. I know the people down there at AAA do a great job. I mean, hell, Davis Martin's having a great year. But the White Sox, I think the one thing they do well is develop pitchers. I think they need a guy that needs to be a boss CEO, and then his word filters down the rest of the roster, and this is how we do White Sox baseball.
I think there's one guy that does stick out, and he was named in that Bob Nightingale article. It's not Carlos Beltran, but it's George Lombard. He was the former first base coach
of the
Dodgers.
That's who Lombard's named after.
Yes.
Lombard, Illinois.
Mr. Lombard.
Yeah, right.
He was the first base coach for the Dodgers and then recently the bench coach for the Tigers. He worked under A.J. Hinch, who obviously Rick Hahn had some interest in 2020. If you want to poach somebody, I was looking through the teams. A.J. Hinch, maybe. I'd be surprised if he was poached from an in-division team.
I mean, they'd be like, yes, go ahead.
Yeah, really. That team was you think White Sox fans, you think you're disappointed this year? Detroit, they're not very happy either.
Yeah, and you know, you see Al Avila getting removed, so maybe he would want to leave now that there's not the front office that hired him.
New GM in there.
Yeah, right.
Maybe he doesn't want that guy. Maybe he wants a different guy, and maybe they can get something from the White Sox of value.
Mark Kotze of Oakland, they're 57-102, though. They haven't really done much under Kotze.
Former White Sox great.
Yeah, former White Sox great. Davey Martinez, former World Series manager. They went 55-104. And then I think the only other name that would be on there is Terry Lavello of the Diamondbacks. But
just got extended.
Yeah, he's doing a good job out there. So I don't think that. I don't see a poaching thing happening.
Davey Martinez sounds like an interesting person. He is a former White Sox, so it fits under the umbrella of former White Sox. And he is a World Series champion, and he's currently managing a team. So he knows baseball right now, and he just has an understaffed team where they keep on trading other great.
That team's about to get sold, too.
Yeah, so maybe they'll be listening for a team that wants to have David Martinez, because he'll be managing whenever he gets fired or replaced out there at Washington Nationals. I would not be too far away from David Martinez. He wouldn't be my number one guy, but he would be a guy I would listen to or talk to the Nationals about.
I'm just not sure where the White Sox are going, and I think we'll get more clarity tomorrow on where the White Sox are going and what they'll be looking for. I think this is a good kind of starter, just looking back at what they've said previously. I think George Lombard fits a decent amount of that, though. He's fairly young. He's 47, a former player, and has been a coach with the Dodgers from 2016 to 2020, and then with the Tigers from 2020 to present. And we'll leave you with this. This is from Casey Osborne, who's a writer for the Dodgers. 15 minutes into a conversation with Dodgers' new first base coach, George Lombard, you might think to yourself that this guy should be doing a beer commercial and telling you to stay thirsty. It's hard to choose what's the most interesting thing about him. Maybe it's the fact that he's the grandson of Harvard Business School's former 41 senior dean and professor of human relations, George Francis Fabian Lombard, or his mother, a white woman named Posey, who is a civil rights activist who marched alongside Martin Luther King, or maybe it's that he traced his family tree back to a pilgrim who came to America on the Mayflower. Lombard is so interesting that in 2005, at the time when he was a 29-year-old outfielder in the Red Sox organization, Peter Gammons mentioned him during his Hall of Fame acceptance speech. So, and this is a quote. So I think from John Curtis to Bill Campbell to Jerry Remy, Buckethead Schmidt to Bruce Hurst, Ellis Hurst to George Lombard, I've been lucky to know thousands of people who love this game as much as I do. People talk about him being a very high energy and player coach. We saw Miguel Cairo bring high energy, be kind of a player's coach, and we saw a little bit of a response from the White Sox. I just think that what we're looking for is completely different than Tony La Russa. I understand managerial experience is important, but also you can give him a bench coach who has been a manager before. Rick Renteria. I mean, it doesn't have to be the greatest bench coach of all time. It's just about being that CEO and bringing a guy that has great attitude, a former player. He's the first player to ever hit a home run in the MLB China series. I just think that he has a nice background. I like the interesting parts about him. And it seems like he is a very, a baseball guy. So I don't know. I think it's an interesting name that's been named by, Bob Nightingale.
You lost me. I stopped paying attention after Buckethead Smith.
All right. Well, that's fair. That's a good point to tune out. Let's end this. And we'll talk to you tomorrow. We will not have a pregame for you, but we will have a postgame. Vinny will be at Guaranteed Rate Field, where we might be hearing from the White Sox brass, whether it be managers, front office. We'll see. Rick Hahn usually speaks before the series, before homestands of series. So we'll see if Rick Hahn and any other news is made, because it said that Tony will make his announcement tomorrow. So we'll see if Tony La Russa makes his announcement tomorrow, and we will have all that coverage for you on CHGO. Follow Vinny on Twitter, at Vinny Duber. He's our CHGO White Sox beat writer. That's Herb Lawrence. You can follow him on Twitter, at EchnerWall23. And I'm Sean Anderson. You can follow me on Twitter, at Sean_W_Anderson. We'll
five-time
talk to
winner.
You tomorrow.
Five-time. Oh, Sox man winner.
Five-time. Five-time. I'll figure out what I have to do for that. But we'll talk to you tomorrow. Go White Sox.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.